Two-week meeting has been mentioned this morning. I always worry about two-week meetings. I don't worry about two-week meetings. I worry about what happens after two-week meetings, because there is a lag. There is a come down. Whether you're hosting a meeting or you've been to the meeting or whatever, there's a lag. And life is filled with these little peaks, etc. But what really determines who you are and what you are is how you handle the valleys in between the peaks. The times where things may not be as exciting as they were before, the times when we just do what we got to do and keep doing it because it's the right thing to do. Also, I wanted to just briefly comment of a concern that I have, that we have to be very, very careful about how we use the Bible. We talk and are sometimes quick to see where others might use it inappropriately, but we may do the same, and we have to be careful that we don't do it, because we have certain thoughts that are important to us, meaningful to us, etc. And just an example here is a lead-in in Psalms 37 and 25. David says, "I have been young and now I'm old, yet I've not seen the righteous forsaken nor his seed begging bread." That's David speaking, and I have seen his seed begging bread. About 40,000 of them right now in Iraq. Okay? Hungering and thirsting. So we have to be very, very, very careful about how we use phrases, etc. In general, we speak about God taking care of us, etc., but does that mean you can never see a Christian starve to death? No, it doesn't mean that at all. It doesn't mean that at all. Which leads into what I'm going to talk about this morning, which are blessings and curses. Blessings and curses. What are they? And really, can we identify them? Can we identify them? Can we tell them apart? It seems natural that we would think that we could tell a blessing from a curse. But we're going to explore this morning, because I am not convinced that we are capable. I'm not convinced that we are capable of really telling a blessing from a curse. We all encounter troubles in our lives. We observe other people encountering troubles in their lives. And we wonder, is that a blessing or a curse? We all see people doing well in their lives, and we see ourselves doing well, and we really don't know if it's a blessing or a curse at all. In Genesis, the 7th chapter, verse 11, "In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day where all the fountains of the great deep broke him up, and the windows of heaven were open, and it rained." It rained. You know, they'd been living in a land that was watered kind of like a mist. It's kind of like a swamp, as I envision. And they didn't have rain. And all of a sudden, the heavens open up, and it starts sprinkling. And it starts raining. And you know how it smells in a swamp? And you know how it smells when it first, if it's been dry for a while, that first rain? How it just cleans the air and refreshes it. So I'm sitting there in Noah's time, and I'm saying, this is cool. This is nice. It's kind of washed everything clean. The air smells so nice. This is nice. The first quarter inch. Blessing. The next inch. Blessing. Next foot. I don't know if this is a blessing or not. The next 6 feet, this is a curse. The same thing, at various times in our lives, we can't tell the difference between a blessing and a curse. We're really quite limited. In Acts, the 8th chapter, verse 3, it says, "As for Saul, he made havoc of the church, entering into every house and hailing men and women, committed them to prison. Saul, entering every house, creating havoc in the church, committed Christians to prison. Blessing or curse? Sounds like a curse to me. Sounds like a curse to me. You got this man running around, capturing Christians, putting some in prison, putting some to death. But the next verse says, therefore they that were scattered abroad went everywhere preaching the word. Oh, it ended up being a blessing. It ended up being a blessing. I can't tell the difference. I really don't think I'm smart enough to tell the difference between blessings and curses. In John, the 9th chapter, I won't read this story, but I'll tell you this story. There's a blind man who had been blind since birth. And Jesus came upon him and had mercy on him. And remember, he spit into the clay and he put the clay on his eyes. And the man saw, happened to do it on the Sabbath. Bad timing. Happened to do it on the Sabbath, but he did. And this man was able to see. And the Pharisees were really upset because Jesus did this on the Sabbath. So they said, are you sure this is the same guy? Is this the same guy? Call his parents in. We want to make sure this is really their son. This may just be somebody that looks like him. We've only looked at him for his entire life, sitting out there blind. But we'll make sure this is the right guy. They call him in. Yeah, it's the right guy. They call him in. Said, how did you get so you could see? Well, I don't really know. This man called Jesus came along. He made some mud, put it on my eyes, and I washed it off, and I could see. Well, you got to be nuts. You got to be nuts. How can evil men do good? And it ended up, as they went through, that they ended up casting him out of the synagogue because he refused to say that Jesus hadn't done this good thing for him. I've never been blind, but I can tell you, last night was the brightest night of the year. The moon was like a spotlight at 1 o'clock in the morning. It was just like a spotlight. And I prefer that much more to one of those nights where you can't see your hand in front of your face. Okay? Just black. That's how I envision blindness. Doesn't sound like a blessing. Doesn't sound like a blessing at all. This man had been born blind. Not because of anything he'd done or anything his parents had done, they explored that possibility. Just born blind. So this blindness was a curse, wasn't it? Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said to him, dost thou believe on the Son of God? He answered and said, who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? And Jesus said unto him, thou hast both seen him, and it is he that talketh with thee. And he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshipped him. Oh, maybe it was a blessing. Maybe it was a blessing after all. Would this man have met Jesus and had all this interaction with Jesus? Had he been born with sight? No. So this certain thing that I thought was a curse ends up being the biggest blessing this man's ever had, because it allowed him to meet and accept Jesus. So I'm not really convinced that I can tell the difference. Sometimes it bothers me when someone asks for a prayer. I'll pray for people and do pray for people, but I typically don't pray for specific things, because I can't tell a blessing from a curse. And I don't want to call a curse down on you. Not that I'm pulling the strings, but... So if you ask me for prayers for the new job, I'll pray that the right thing happens. But I'm not going to pray for you a new job, because I don't know if that new job is going to be a blessing or a curse to you. I have no idea. No idea. And all kinds of things can be blessings and curses. Certainly, we hope that your spouse is a blessing. But don't tell Job that, because they could be a curse. Our friends, we think of as blessings. But evil companions corrupt good morals, and they can be a curse. Our children, we always think of our children as being blessings. Really? I have seen children that I'm convinced were the curse of curses to their parents. Might have been one of them, I don't know. But the curse of curses to their parents. And even our brother. So anyone can be a blessing or a curse. Why are some cursed and why are some blessed? I don't know that I can tell you the answer. In James, the 12th chapter, we see that, not in James, the 12th chapter, in Acts, the 12th chapter, we see that James is in prison. James, an apostle, is in prison, and he loses his head. He's beheaded. Peter is in prison, and an angel releases him. Why? I don't know. God has a plan that I don't understand sometimes. I don't understand, and I can't tell which one is good or bad as I watch it. Paul was caught up several times, miraculously escaped. Stephen was caught up once and stoned to death. Why? Ecclesiastes 9:11 says, time and chance happens to everybody. And I believe that's true. I really am not of the belief that God has his finger manipulating events in us in this life. He really doesn't care that much about what happens to us. He cares about us. So time and chance happens to everybody. Sin does contribute. In Isaiah the 59th chapter, says, behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, neither his ear heavy that it cannot hear, but your iniquities have separated between you and your God, and your sins have hid his face from you, that he will not hear. So sometimes the things that happen to me are a result of my sin. And I certainly can contribute to my own problems, right? Cain, when he was with Abel in the 5th chapter, I guess it's the 4th chapter, and his sacrifice wasn't accepted, God said, well, if you do what's right, yours will be accepted too. Yours will be accepted too. And if you don't, sin lieth at the door. And he chose something, and it turned out being a curse to him. So we certainly contribute to our own blessings and curses. But we're all going to have struggles and troubles. And sometimes I think Christianity as a whole, and us included, need to be careful about the perception that we have of troubles and struggles. The perceptions that we give to people about struggles and troubles. And that's why I think a lot of Christians' faith is going to be called into question here pretty quick as we watch what happens in the Middle East with the potential genocide of a large group of, quote, Christians, unquote. There will be a lot of people who will question where God is and what he's doing. I want to look at Romans, the 5th chapter. Look at some things that we might look at a little bit one-sided. Romans, the 5th chapter, verse 3. Not only so, but we glory in tribulations also, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. Hope maketh not ashamed, because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Ghost, which is given unto us. We glory in troubles. really. We glory in troubles, struggles, because we know they work patience. Really. Is that the way it always works? If we really read this as it is meant to be read, and I'll tell you how that is shortly, it should say tribulation may work patience. Because I don't know about you, but sometimes my troubles work impatience. In fact, maybe most of the time my troubles work impatience. And sometimes that leads to desperation in people. Because it doesn't work patience with them, it works impatience. And the only way it works patience is verse 2. We have access by faith into this grace wherein we stand and rejoice in hope of the glory of God. That's the way it works patience. But don't kid yourself and don't kid other people into saying that they're not going to have troubles. And that every time they have trouble, they should just be grinning all over because it worketh patience. It doesn't work that way. Sometimes it works impatience. It's still tribulation. Just because tribulation works patience doesn't mean it isn't still tribulation. Doesn't mean it isn't still trouble. People have to know. You know, just because I become a Christian doesn't mean that the world is all going to turn honey and gold. It doesn't work that way. We still live in this world. In Philippians, the fourth chapter, verse 6, be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God, and the peace of God, which passes all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. So, I don't need to worry about anything. If I have something, I just ask God for it, and it'll be taken care of. Not what it says. Not what it says. Don't worry about it, because God is in charge. That's easier said than done. But, you know, sometimes God answers no. Sometimes God, I think I know what I need for a blessing, and God says, I don't think so. I don't think so. Maybe not now, maybe not ever, but I don't think so. And we have to find the peace of God whether he answers yes or no, and that's hard. That's hard. In 1 Peter, Peter talks about a trial of your faith. In the first chapter, he says, who are kept by the power of God through faith into salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time, wherein ye greatly rejoice, though now for a season, if need be, ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations, that the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold, that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ. The trial of your faith. It is going to happen, and if we work through it right with God, we will become more pure. But if we don't, we will become weak and impure. Notice that Peter doesn't sugarcoat anything. He says, wherein ye greatly rejoice, though now for a season if need be, you are in heaviness through manifold temptations. You got problems. You got problems. Ephesians 5 and 20 has Paul saying, give thanks for all things. Careful. But Paul didn't give thanks for all things. It's very specific. All things is given us by God. But Paul didn't give thanks for all things. The Judaizing teachers, he commanded they be thrown out. He wasn't thankful they were there. He threw them out. In Philippians 4, Paul talks about learning how to be abased and how to abound. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, I know how to abound. Everywhere in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry. Oh, Christians get hungry. Both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. That is the key. I can do all things through Christ that strengtheneth me. Eventually, through Him, I will do all things. And you know what? Through Him, it can all be counted as good because the bad gets wiped away. Gets wiped away. Romans 8 and 28. All things work together for good to them that love the Lord. All things work together for good to them that love the Lord. The problem with words is you have to define them. And the definition here that we have a problem with is good. All things work together for good. I can think of a lot of circumstances, that as I look at them, I can see absolutely no good. But God can. It's in God's plan. I think Rick talks about that when he talked in his lesson about his mother passing away and about Clint passing away. God has a plan, but I can't see it. I don't see it. I have to trust in Him. So as we get down to it, if I can't tell the difference between blessings and curses, I can tell what looks like it's going to be a blessing, it turns out to be a curse. I can tell what looks like it's going to be a curse, it turns out to be a blessing. If I can't really tell the difference, it leaves me kind of hanging as a Christian. And that's where I want to bring up the principle of overwhelming blessing. The principle of overwhelming blessing. This overcomes a trial. And I'll give you some examples. If you are told that you have cancer, and every once in a while I tell some people they have cancer. If you're told that you have cancer, if you're told it's advanced, but we're going to try to treat it, and the odds of your survival are 30%. Yeah, we'll always give you the odds of your survival, not the odds the other way. Because that's 70%. That's bad. The odds of your survival are 30%. You are going to worry about things, and you're going to stew about things, and all the troubles of life will still be there, still be going on. But the day that you walk in the doctor's office and he says, we reviewed all your scans, we reviewed all your blood work, and we're reasonably certain that you have not one cancer cell left in your body. At that point, that is an overwhelming blessing. You won't think about any of your other troubles. You won't think about any of your other circumstances because it's the principle of overwhelming blessing. If you have a birthday party for your children and everybody gets together and we all give them too much and they give a gift and, oh, yeah, that's fun, that's cool. They unwrap it, they play with it a little bit. Next gift, that's fun, that's cool, they unwrap it. But when you get to the one gift that they really wanted, what happens to all the rest of the gifts? They're gone. They're forgotten. That's a principle of overwhelming blessing. One more example. If you as a parent are in the Walmart and you're walking around busy doing your shopping and suddenly you realize it's too quiet and you look around and your three-year-old isn't there where they're supposed to be and you can't see them anywhere, what happens is panic. That's the definition of panic, okay? You look everywhere at once. Can't find them. Shut down the store so nobody can get out. Everybody's looking for this child. Suddenly, they find him under the men's clothes rack, hiding, playing hide and seek. When they bring that child to you, does anything else in the world matter? Does anything else matter? Not at that moment. Not at that moment. Nothing else matters. That is the principle of overwhelming blessing. When a blessing is so big that it overwhelms all the troubles and struggles, and I don't care about everything else, whether it's a blessing or a curse. I could care less about anything else. Christ on the cross, blessing or curse? Blessing or curse? Good or bad? Well, if we're one of the apostles sitting in the upper room, it's pretty bad. If we're one of the apostles that are standing around the bottom of the cross, watching the blood drip, watching him try to get another breath, it's pretty bad. Pretty bad. But as we look at it, it's an overwhelming blessing. It's an overwhelming blessing. That if we can keep our focus on that, it makes it almost irrelevant whether we define everything else as a blessing or a curse. Because at that moment, the more I think about that and the more I focus on that, it's a principle of overwhelming blessing. It overrides everything else. The blessing of forgiveness of our sins and life eternal. That is an overwhelming blessing. So I don't have to decide if something is a blessing or a curse. I'm going to be wrong half the time anyway. All I know is Jesus died on the cross to take away my sins, and that is an overwhelming blessing, irregardless of everything else. Irregardless. And that's a blessing you've already been given. It's not one you're looking forward to. It's one you've been given. You know, we remember Paul saying that if it's just in this life that this has value, that he was the most miserable of all. But he didn't say it didn't have value in this life, Christianity. He didn't say that. And God has given me now, not in heaven, God has given me now forgiveness of sins. Now. I don't have to wait to get there. I don't have to wait to stand in front of the judge. I have it now. God has given me an inheritance. Now. I haven't got there to collect yet, but I have it. It's mine. And you can't take it away. I have it now. I have it now. I'm one of his sons. You're one of his sons or daughters. Now. That is an overwhelming blessing. An overwhelming blessing. Hopefully I didn't run you around Robin Hood's barn too much this morning. It just concerns me when I keep trying to put things in boxes. That's what guys do. We have these boxes, we put everything in. And I want to put something in a blessing or a curse box. And I've become convinced I can't tell the difference. Except for one, I can tell you, I can tell the difference absolutely for sure. Jesus' death on the cross is the ultimate blessing for me. If you would like to take advantage of that this morning, we offer you that opportunity as we stand and sing the closing song.